Tonight on Totally Hits 93.3, catch MTSU men's basketball as the Blue Raiders take on UTEP at 8 o'clock. Coverage is also available on the Totally Hits Nashville app and at totallyhitsnashville.com. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Mitch Light of The Athletic to help us preview the college football playoff semifinals today and tomorrow. Hi, Mitch. How are you?
I'm doing well. Hope you're doing well, Adam.
I am. Thank you very much. So let's start with the first semifinal tonight, the Fiesta Bowl, Miami versus Ole Miss. Give me your read on this matchup. What will you be watching for tonight?
Be watching the line of scrimmage and what Miami can do to put pressure on Trinidad Chambliss, and if he can elude that pressure like he did against Georgia. I mean, if you guys recall, I think it was the third quarter. He had maybe three of the best consecutive plays that I've ever seen by a college quarterback. I think two times in a row, he eluded pressure and made negative plays into positive plays. And the next one, he rolled out to his right through a dime like 20, 30 yards down the field. Because the name of the game is getting pressure on the quarterback, but if you can elude it like he can, then you can make the teams, you know, make the defense quiet. So I think that's going to be a key for Ole Miss. For Miami, can they control the line of scrimmage and run the ball like they have with Mark Fletcher Jr. and kind of like their game plan against Texas A&M and take pressure off of Carson Beck? Because we know in his losses, he threw six interceptions in the two losses. Now, one of them against SMU, I think it was a miscommunication that came out after. But, you know, Miami can't make the big mistake on offense, and Ole Miss has to make Miami pay when they pressure Trinidad Chambliss.
Mitch, this DeMond Williams story in Washington is fascinating to me. For those who haven't been following it, share what's going on, and I want you to answer this question as well. I heard Pete Thamel of ESPN refer to this as a potential flashpoint in college athletics. Do you agree with that?
I don't know if that's the case. I'm not saying Pete overreacted because it seems like such a huge story, but like the Matthew Sluka situation, remember at UNLV earlier last year after four games, he left UNLV or after three games, and everyone's like, oh, this is going to happen all the time now. People are going to leave midseason. Well, it didn't really happen anymore. So it's easy to overreact in the moment. And for the listeners who don't know, DeMond Williams Jr. is a really talented quarterback at Washington. A little backstory, he was committed to Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin for a while. He's from Arizona, ended up signing with Arizona, never played there, followed his coach, Jed Fish, to Washington. And in this era, it's now people make announcements when they're coming back to college. I don't think Willie Donick sent a press release that he was returning to Vanderbilt for his sophomore year or had a Twitter graphic that said, I'm back. Well, that's what happens now. Guys re-sign with their school. So
I told my parents. I told my parents.
Athletic. Go ahead, Willie.
I told my parents that I was coming back for my sophomore year. That's really, I think, the only people that really needed to know, I guess. And my everybody else kind of assumed.
Did Eddie Fulmer care?
I don't want to ask that question. I didn't want to ask. I just showed up. I was George Costanza. I just showed up sophomore year. I was
Donick's
okay.
Back. So he signed a new revenue share contract that has been reported by The Athletic and other people that he's coming back. Well, someone got in his ear. Remember my earlier story about being committed to Lane Kiffin? I'm not saying it was LSU and Lane Kiffin. So now he wants to enter the transfer portal. And the school has to – you ask the school to put you in the portal, and they have to comply within like 48 hours or something like that. Well, Washington is not doing that. They are fighting. You know, there's legal issues back and forth on this. So it's kind of a debacle for Washington, because he's a good quarterback, and they are left now in a situation where they won't have him. I don't think there's a scenario where he comes back just because things that have happened. And there's other things, too. Not to keep rambling on, but there was a Washington soccer player who passed away. I think she died of cancer. And he announced this news on social media why a lot of the athletes were at a celebration of life for her. So that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. So I don't see a scenario where he's coming back. But the deal is, will he have to, if he signs somewhere else, will Washington try and recoup some of that money? It's a very fascinating situation. It's a kind of a microcosm. It shows all the facets of college athletics right now.
We're talking with Mitch Light of The Athletic. Now, Mitch, who has to do more in this Oregon and Indiana game? Who has to do more for their team to win? Is it more, or is it Mendoza, or is it more than that? Because these two teams seem to be so equal to one another.
That's a great question, Derek, and I don't know. Like, it's because for as good as Mendoza was all year, if you remember that game, he threw a pick six. I mean, that was, to me, that's what made that win even more impressive. Like, if you think you're Indiana at that point in the season, if they're going to win in Oregon, they got to play a perfect game. Well, they didn't play a perfect game. Again, they threw a pick six and overcame that. Both teams had their season lows in total yardage in that game. For Indiana, it was 326. For Oregon, it was 267. So I can sit here and say it's going to be defensive slugfest, and the team that makes the big mistake is going to lose the game. But that's what it was last time, and Indiana made the big mistake, and they won the game there. So I agree with you. I think these teams are so evenly matched. I think Oregon's probably playing with a little bit of a chip on its shoulder. With Indiana, has a Heisman Trophy winner and the number one team. Everyone's talking about Kurt Cignetti this week, and Oregon's like, hey, you know, what about us? We got a great program, too. So I love both of these matchups. I don't have a good feel for either one. I'd make the boring pick and pick Indiana just because they've been so good. I mean, their defense has been so good this year. I didn't realize how – I mean, just look at their schedule. They rarely give up more than 10 points. And I'm not an X's and O's genius, but when you don't give up more than 10 points, you're going to win a lot of games.
Mitch Light is with us from The Athletic. Mitch, there was so much speculation on Lane Kiffin's role and influence on Ole Miss's run. Here they are. What? How did it all shake out? I went off into the hinterlands for a couple weeks, and I don't. So who's coaching tonight for Ole Miss? Who's there? Who's not there?
Well, obviously Pete Golding is the head coach, and the situation was that Lane Kiffin is bringing four position coaches from Ole Miss, offensive position coaches only, with him. He's bringing eight staffers totally. One of the staffers is getting a promotion. It's going to be an assistant position coach. But the bottom line is, there are four offensive position coaches that are going with Lane Kiffin, and those guys coached in the first two rounds. Running backs coach Kevin Smith, obviously offensive coordinator Charlie Weiss, but also tight ends coach Joe Cox and wide receivers coach George McDonald. The first two guys I mentioned, Charlie Weiss and Kevin Smith, the running backs coach, are staying with the team through the playoffs. The other two are not. The key is obviously Charlie Weiss, the offensive play caller. And the interesting part, or the thing that Pete Golden keeps saying, and I think a lot of fans might not realize, this would have been a bigger deal 5-6 years ago when you could only have 10 position coaches and coaching staffs kind of were limited in size. Now it is unlimited coaches that you can have on-field instructors. So if you go to college football practice now, there's an assistant offensive line coach. There's an assistant linebackers coach. The point being, they've got people in that building that have worked with these position groups. So I agree with Pete Golding. I don't think it's a big deal, especially since they do have the offensive coordinator, Charlie Weiss Jr.
How would you evaluate Vanderbilt's reaction right now in the transfer portal? I still, and I shouldn't probably, but I still am surprised when a player who has a defined role on a good team is playing a lot, goes into the portal. And that's happened to a couple of players, noteworthy players for Vanderbilt so far. But I also know that this happens all the time. And for the same amount of money, if you play your cards right, you know what you're doing, you can bring in somebody who's got equal, if not better, talent. But I'm thinking of Fontenette and Richardson when I throw that out there.
Yeah, I mean, those were kind of surprises. Richardson, there was a he said, she said financial situation where, you know, the sources that we've talked to at The Athletic say, you know, Vanderbilt matched an offer, and his agent asked for more money, and that was matched, and then whatever. You know, he's decided he can make more money elsewhere. Fontenette is, I think, more of a scheme issue. He's kind of a tweener. He plays that star position at Vanderbilt. I don't know enough about the scheme, but I think it's a situation where he felt that he needed to play in a different scheme that would showcase his skills better for a shot at the NFL. So he's a key part of the Vanderbilt defense, no doubt. It's a blow. I think this was not a financial situation. I was told, or we were to one of our guys who covers the portal was told that he was on the upper end of the safety market financially, nationally. So that wasn't the issue there. I think it was more of a scheme thing.
So how do you think they've compensated so far?
Well, I think the biggest key for this team was replenishing the offensive line. They managed to do it last year after suffering heavy losses, and it was a very solid offensive line this year. They've signed a left tackle from North Dakota State, who was expected to be at the higher end of the market financially, and they got a starting center from Pittsburgh. So I think they need to add a couple more guys in the portal at that position. They clearly need to add a big play wide receiver. They've had a couple guys on campus for that. They got a punter. It's been three or four straight years they've had, like, plugged in a punter. This guy's from the U.S. of A. He's not from Australia, the first American punter at Vanderbilt in several years there. So, you know, there's another week to go in the portal. The thing with Vanderbilt is classes have started, so there's a little bit more of a urgency to get guys going and in, you know, enrolled and all that. That's why you're seeing when there's an announcement for the portal, sometimes it takes the school like a week to announce it because there's hurdles to climb and all that stuff. But, like, you've seen Vanderbilt, they've announced it almost the next day because classes have started. So if they get guys to commit, they get things turned around quickly and get these guys on campus.
I'm flashing back to when we didn't get a whole lot as a basketball player at Vanderbilt. You don't get to go home for very often for the holidays. So you're sleepy-eyed. The dorms aren't open yet. And you have to go to the registrar's office to get your classes ready. I mean, that was just not what you look forward to. You're like, do I really have to do that? Can you just tell me where my class is when the classes start? I'll show up. But, Mitch, speaking of that, you and I were both at Memorial last night. Great win for Vanderbilt. Sort of backed up what they had done in the pre-conference. Showcase game. Great atmosphere. I still think, and you would agree, I think you'll agree, there's another level to Memorial, but it's starting to feel more like the big home court advantage that it can be when everybody's all in, and this team looks like it's got a chance to do some good things.
Yeah, no doubt. It was the best. The first half was a lot of fun, up and down, great offense. It ended up being high scoring, I think we all agree. Too many fouls, whether you want to say the refs called too many fouls or the players didn't adjust the way, you know, it's debatable there. But it was actually, like, fun to watch both coaches try and play around the foul situation. Like, I was sitting behind the Vanderbilt bench and just looking at Mark Byington looking at his assistants like, what do we do now?
And then, like, everybody's got four fouls.
Foul out and was cramping up and couldn't play there. So, yeah, I mean, it's the exciting part if you're Vanderbilt, obviously they're getting great contributions from Tyler Tanner, Duke Miles, and Tyler Nichols been playing well. I think there's some other role players. Like, Tyler Harris was really good in the exhibition game against Virginia in some of those early games. This is a guy that shot 50% from three last year. I think, I don't know, it's a confidence issue or what, I think he's a guy that can get it going and add some even more scoring. So I'm not going to say the team can play all, you know, there's a whole another level. I mean, Mark Byington would probably say that. But I do think this team can consistently play at a high level and add some even more scoring points if a guy like Tyler Harris gets it going.
Real quick, Mitch, where does Tyler Tanner rank? He's ascending fast, but he's starting, I think, to get into a conversation of, you know, when you think about the best players Vanderbilt has had over the years, he's getting into that class.
He is, and it's hard for us, like, the way we think about things is because we go by recruiting ranking. At least I do. It's like, oh, that guy's a big recruit, so he's great. Like, at some point, you got to throw that out, and it doesn't matter that Vanderbilt was his only high major. He is playing at such a high level, at such a consistent level. You know, he's got to do it over the course of the conference season. I think after the season, we can assess where he is and all that stuff. But the thing that's impressive about him is consistency. I can't recall a game where he hasn't played well this year. You know, maybe he's not scoring 20 points every game, but he's been such a consistent force and, you know, doesn't turn it over, all those things, all those cliches that a coach will say. Yeah, he's playing at an extremely high level.
Mitch Light of The Athletic has been our guest on D-Mates. Vingen and Donicky joins us every week during college football season. Mitch, great stuff as always. We'll catch up next week.
All right, talk to you guys later.
Also, what is in the water in Harrisonburg, Virginia? Mark Byington, Kurt Cignetti.
Yeah.
That's the breeding ground for top.
JMU. It's all having the Dukes.
Yes.
The Dukes.
JMU. I was laughing, Willie, while, you know, Mitch was talking because I knew the day would come that college players were going to get paid. It was just inevitable. And I don't know why the NCAA, well, I know why, because it was just that arrogance. It had never happened. But I would have never thought it would have gotten to what it is now.
It's like, an absolute
He's record. Explaining it. I'm just like, wow. Like, I thought
it's making NFL free agency.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Like, there's nothing.
We ain't even talking about freshmen coming in. We're talking about Transfers coming over here. This guy's getting an appointment.
North Dakota State over here. Wyoming over here.
What about the freshman class they brought in? Yeah. Like, what's up with their class? Like, where do they rank? Yeah. Now it's all about this portal guy. And it's not about talent. It's, well, we got to pay him this much. It's this person's in this tax. It's worse than the NFL.
615-737-1025. We'll get back into the Titans coaching search. We'll take your reaction to our question from earlier. Albert Breer of Sports Illustrated says, Amy Adams Strunk is looking for a PR win with the head coaching hire. Do we think she is willing and or able to pay top dollar for that PR win to one of the top coaching candidates on the market? 615-737-1025. We are live at Bridgestone Arena. David James is back at our Busy Bee Plumbing and Heating and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service.